My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. My fellow plebs, today's podcast is also brought to you by Moon Mortgage. As the world moves increasingly towards the mainstream adoption of Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage makes it possible to materialize your assets into real estate. Through the collateralization of mortgages with Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage will be launching lending solutions to allow investors to easily leverage their assets to purchase investments in owner-occupied property. Moon Mortgage's crypto mortgage will be launching soon for home buyers in Texas, Florida, and Colorado, and will also be open to investors in most states across the U.S. for investment properties. Welcome to the future of mortgages. Visit moonmortgage.com today to register and learn more. Moon Mortgage Residential is registered with the NMLS under number 235334. Today's episode is brought to you by Gordon Law Group. If you've tried to do Bitcoin taxes yourself, you know how complicated it is. You can spend hours and hours going through your transactions and researching tax forms, and you're still not sure if it's right or if the IRS will come after you. Or maybe you're so intimidated by Bitcoin taxes that you don't even know where to start. Gordon Law Group can help. Ditch the spreadsheets and feel confident with a bulletproof Bitcoin tax return. They can help with IRS payment plans, and they also provide a full range of legal and accounting services for Bitcoin and digital asset startups. Get your taxes done right the first time with the original Bitcoin and digital asset tax pros. Go to GordonLawLTD.com/BTC. As a bonus, they'll send you the ultimate Bitcoin tax guide for free. That's GordonLawLTD.com/BTC.
Good morning, Bitcoin. How's everybody doing?
Morning, Carly. Doing well. Doing well. Looking forward to this conversation today. Good morning, Shinobi. How's it going?
It's early, and my brain is not on.
Neither is mine. I can't seem to hit the laugh emoji. Hi, Shinobi.
Well, time to chug coffee.
Exactly. Exactly. Are you West Coast, I'm assuming?
Nope, I am in Gotham City.
Ah. Still early.
Yep.
We're excited today to kind of kick off a little bit of a series about just building on top of Bitcoin. And obviously, you have been doing lots of that. So I always like to start it off for anybody who's listening who maybe doesn't know who you are. Maybe you could just give a brief intro about yourself and what you got cooking.
So I've been in Bitcoin for quite some time, and we've been building Bitcoin software and hardware for as long as Bitcoin has been around. And we really focus on keeping people sats safe with hardware wallets and other kinds of security devices. And then we have our fun devices, like the block clock and things like that.
I love it. And Shinobi, would love to hear from you too. Maybe just give the people a little intro about yourself and, you know, what you're up to these days.
Well, I have also been in Bitcoin for quite a while, but pretty much what I do is I just harass Rodolfo for features I want and the things that he builds until he caves and eventually implements them after I harass him for 6 months or so.
That is very true. Unfortunately, my DMs are full of nobis requests.
Oh, that's funny. So, NBK, what's the most exciting thing that you're working on right now in the Bitcoin space to you?
So, there's a few things. There's actually quite a few things. So, on the hardware side, we are building the sort of like the fully featured cold card, which is Cold Card Q1. It has like a full keyboard. It has a QR scanner. It has batteries. So, it's like the true mountain man device in the shape of a BlackBerry. And then we have the NFC cards that are sort of like finally like pushing NFC to happen in Bitcoin. I really think that that's how we get the next billion people to use hardware devices. What else? And we have the SATS cards that are the bearer instrument, right? Like it's sort of like the best and easiest way for you to gift Bitcoin, and also great for privacy because there is no on-chain footprint for transactions between people. What else? On the software side, we have like a bunch of like new little things like the Bitcoin message checker and what else that could be interesting for this audience. We're working on a lot of things. We have like, well, I kind of man it, but really is the team is helping. We have the Bitcoin.review podcast now where we spend 2-3 hours sort of really getting deep into topics and things without much sort of fluff. We try to keep that super high signal. Yeah. And then there's a few other initiatives that are coming, especially like around the Noster stuff. And yeah. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
How do you find time in the day? My goodness, you're working on so much stuff. It's amazing. I love to hear it. I think I've seen the new cold card that you're coming out with, the keyboard that looks kind of like the BlackBerry. Tell us more about that, because that thing looks really slick. At least I think I've seen it. Maybe I haven't, but I could have sworn I've seen something very similar to that. Tell us more about that.
So that one has a funny story. Like we've been wanting to make a device like that for many years, but we couldn't find the economics on the right hardware that we thought that was like secure enough and made right. But eventually like a few stars aligned on some modules that we wanted to use. And I always wanted personally a hardware wallet that had a QWERTY, so a full keyboard, right? So eventually we're like, okay, well, let's make it. And we kind of like, we were just going to make it for ourselves, like the first cold card as well. But, and you know, small sort of run, but it does seem that a lot of people want it. So we've tweaked a few things and we're going to go sort of like full production with that, like real numbers. So that's kind of fun. I think it's definitely... like, I like to describe it as the mountain man device.
I love that. I want to get one of those. They just, I don't know, I feel like just having the keyboard on it, I don't know, there's something about it that to me makes it seem like easier to use almost in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, you know, for passphrase input.
Yeah.
Or secure note taking. I think it would be very, very useful. And then there is all the sort of like things that maybe people here haven't heard about, but you know, like mini script and more complex sort of like Bitcoin activities that we will have in the near future. That bigger screen with the keyboard is going to help you really sort of sort out contracts and do a lot of verification. We do have a lot of boomer customers who have voiced their need for a bigger screen with bigger text because their eyes are getting older. So that should help as well.
That's what I mean. I just feel like there's a level of more comfort, or maybe even you feel safer using it. Like anytime I use a hardware wallet, I'm like, am I doing this right? I triple check everything. Even if I'm just, you know, sending or receiving or something, I'm always hyper aware of, okay, is this correct? You know, so I feel like having the bigger screen and the keyboard just adds that a little more of a layer of comfort.
I'm of two minds with this. So I think there is sort of like two very sort of distinct uses on how people do Bitcoin. One is sort of like that phone lower amount experience, right? So that would be Lightning, that would be Tap Signer. on the phone and you're just sort of like paying for beer or you're buying like lower price items. And then you have this other experience where you're handling like, you know, your savings account, right? Like similarly. So you have like real money on it, you're sending bigger transactions or you're topping up your lower amount wallets. And that experience should be a bit like sacred. It shouldn't be like, oh, I carry my hardware wallet in my pocket kind of situation, right? Nobody should ever carry their hardware wallet in their pocket. So making a device that a bit bigger, a little bit bulkier, I think sort of like sets the tone. It makes you be a little bit more mindful in that interaction with Bitcoin because, you know, your coins are on the line and you want to check addresses properly. You want to be in an environment where you're not exposed to somebody hitting you in the head, like a cafe or something, you know? I think it's nice to sort of create a little bit of like security hygiene.
Yeah, NBK. Question for you.
Yes.
what would you say to me if I were to say to you that I'm an MK3 maxi?
Why?
I'm just curious your rebuttal because that's all I have right now. So I don't know if it's worth going up to MK3.
Oh, I see. So else. The MK3. Okay, so like the MK3, the MK2 is still more secure than 99% of the wallets on the market, right? They do have flaws. They do have like they're part of this sort of evolution, right? That the devices do evolve greatly. Especially on features and security. So each iteration, like we're trying very seriously to improve everything, right? That's why we're on the fourth version now. We learn a lot of lessons and you know, Mark IV does have, you know, an incredible more amount of memory, a stupid more amount of security. It has a better case. You know, it's all about evolution. I mean, there is a reason why nobody uses the original iPhone anymore, right? We're inventing a new category of things, right? Hardware wallets are only like, say, 8 years old or so. And the pace of innovation is going to be very fast. While, for example, you know, many people don't update their iPhones anymore every year because, you know, you're not getting a lot more from the previous year. While on hardware wallets, you know, you are. I mean, you know, so for example, on Mark III, you have very limited memory. You have only one secure element. You have, you know, the keys is a little bit of different mechanical design. While Mark IV, you know, you get NFC, you get two secure elements, you get nearly infinite memory regarding transactions. You get, you know, because of this other secure element that we use, you get all the trick pins, you get the USB-C connector, you get virtual disk. I mean, I can spend all day here explaining, but, you know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have that one anymore. It doesn't mean that you must upgrade, but, like, there is a million reasons to upgrade. And what I find a lot of our customers do is they'll set up, for example, friends and family with their older cold card, and they will buy themselves, a few new ones and keep that sort of thing going. The same way I do with my wife and kids. Like, I buy new laptops and phones, like, every few months. I'm pretty bad at that.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that.
And then just pass them along.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about setting up my brother with a cold card. He has a company that shall not be named in this space right now, so I'm going to switch him up. Yeah, I think Anna had a question for you as well.
Yes, I do have a question. NBK, so I heard a rumor that...
I can hear Anna. Oh. It might be Twitter Spaces bug.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I just think it's Rodolfo.
What? Any? Yeah, everyone else? Okay.
Can't hear? All right. We'll have her leave and come back, NBK. Well, I have a quick question for you, or actually a quick question for Shinobi. So... Shinobi, what are things that you bug NVK to add to the cold card? Anything come to mind in particular?
Just a million little dumb features. Think message signing, like formatting your SD card on the device so you can actually have that done by the same thing you're trusting for your signing. Just little things I get in my head that I harass him about.
I think those two are on the latest, by the way. I think you can do both. Right now, Shinobi, you're not paying attention to the firmware releases.
Well, yeah, because you know what? I'm starting to get a little agitated about how much of my money you have, sir.
Hey, the firmwares are free upgrades.
Yeah, but you know what? It's in the safe. It's sitting there. I'll get around to it. That's the correct attitude.
Only upgrade if it's a security upgrade or you know, if you really want the feature. There's no rush.
All right. I think I appreciate that answer, Shinobi. Anna, I think we have you back now. Let's see if NVK can hear and you can ask your question.
Hey, NVK. So I heard a rumor that if someone gave you a Trezor, you'll have the Bitcoin off of it in like 24 hours. Is it true or is it just a rumor?
Yeah, so it's not me. I mean, that's on the internet. It costs about $13 to take the seed out of a Trezor. And it takes like minutes. That's why it's so important to use Trezor with a passphrase. It's because the device doesn't really have the set of trade-offs that they have does not include physical security.
Also think if you have a Model T, that SD card 2FA token they have is a nice feature that you physically can't even decrypt the seed unless you have the SD card inserted that you set that up with if you're going to insist on using a Trezor.
That's right. I mean, like, yeah, but, you know, even then, Shinobi, because there is no secure element to attest the firmware, I would still put a passphrase on it. I mean, mind you, everybody should use a passphrase anyways. Right, even a cold card, nothing is infallible. Given enough resources and time, it's very likely that you could get into something. But you know, $13 in a few minutes is like a little bit low on my sort of way I look at this.
Yeah, I definitely can't argue with that.
Yeah. So what about Ledger? Does the same persist there? I know they have Snoop Dogg wearing it around his neck these days. So I feel like that's kind of not really OPSEC friendly.
So Ledger has actually really good physical security. It's one of the best physical secure devices out there. The problem with Ledger is that it's fully closed source, and you know, it's like a shitcoin machine. It has a small screen. The issue with closed source is that, like, you can't have people inspect the source code, review it, and sort of like publish that they reviewed it or deterministically build it. And then, you know, it's not an air gap device. It requires USB, especially with their new model where it streams the transaction back and forth between the computer. It's a very different set of trade-off. It's not for me, but it does have its place. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I have another question as well. This is kind of in the topic of what kind of separates CoinKite from Trezor and Ledger. When did you go Bitcoin only? Did you have your shitcoin days? And what kind of made you kind of go through with that transition?
So, you know, if you've been in Bitcoin since the very, very early days, we didn't know what was going to happen, what was going to win, what we were building. So, you know, I never really had like a trader multi-coin thing, but I did, and I'm talking about like here, like 2011, 2012 kind of thing. In those years, it was very easy to put everyone in jail and sort of like say that Bitcoin is dead, right? So I liked the idea of having at least another cryptocurrency sort of around in case that did happen, that had enough security. And in those days was Litecoin. And I saw Litecoin as just sort of like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of trade-offs I don't like. It's kind of stupid, but it is an alternative to a thing that could be killed so that we can continue with the cryptocurrency experiment, right? But, you know, as the years passed, I really sort of felt like that there was no point for it to exist anymore. And you know, we sort of slowly but surely killed support for it. What people may not know is that if you're building for Bitcoin, because it uses the same primitives as Bitcoin, you essentially get Litecoin for free in terms of implementation. So yeah, I really feel like, you know, the shitcoin stuff really sort of derides value and time and effort and resources from Bitcoin. So kill it with fire. So that's a little bit on that background.
Awesome.
I still have a Mark One loaded with that firmware, just as a reminder that even you used to be a shitcoiner.
Right. There you go. No, it's true. I mean, you know, I always felt that it was important to have an alternative, not for trading per se, but eventually you didn't, and you should kill that device with fire.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLIVE to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com. As 2023 begins, the broke issue stares head-on into the looming realities of a broken economy, a more broke central bank, and considers how Bitcoiners can share their knowledge, their projects, and their mentalities to remain strong economic nodes throughout the winter. As a global Bitcoin news medium with a mission to accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization, Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Inside Bitcoin Magazine, you will find exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, and powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Each issue will be shipped safely in a secure box mailer to protect the integrity of each copy. Print magazines, not money. Buy Bitcoin Magazine.
Yes, Shinobi, I guess the same question kind of goes for you. Did you have kind of, what was your early experience like in the space?
Well, my early experience was I didn't know my head from my ass. And it took me a few years to kind of flip that around and figure the difference out. But I shitcoined a little bit back in the day. Not going to lie about that.
Yeah, Shinobi still does. I mean, I've heard he's still peddling KuCoin.
Hey, dude, Pepes will live forever.
Oh, Pepes are not a shitcoin. It's still Bitcoin.
There we go.
I have a question for both of you guys, Shinobi and MVK. You know, we're talking about building on top of Bitcoin. Obviously, user adoption is coming along, but we still have a ways to go. I'm curious in both of your minds, you know, what are the things that need to happen next? I think MVK, you sort of touched on this in your view of what you're working on, but I'm curious to hear from you. You know, what do you think moves the needle forward the most in this next sort of, I guess, round of Bitcoin adoption that I think we're going to start seeing pick up?
Well, I mean, I think like it's kind of a waste of time to educate people too much about Bitcoin. People find Bitcoin when they're ready for Bitcoin, and governments do all the job for us for free, right? You know, Trudeau will freeze people's money. They will sort of, Macron is going to say that you can't transfer more than 1,000 euros. You know, like these guys are doing all the job. People will find Bitcoin eventually. So, you know, just focus on building awesome stuff. And then have patience. You know, like gold lasted over 5,000 years. Fiat was like, you know, took about what, like 50 years for it to happen. And then now it's sort of like to kill gold. And then now we're going to slowly kill fiat, but it's going to take time. So, you know, just build and chill.
I love that. Shinobi, what about you?
I think, honestly, it's just applications that hold people's hand better. Like, you had things like Casa and Unchained pop up, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years that take advantage of multi-sig to build those kind of things. And, you know, lately over the last year, Nunchuck is kind of coming up and offering similar services. But, you know, I kind of agree with NVK at this point. Like, unless you're talking about somebody who intentionally wants to learn more or wants to get deeper into this space, like sitting there and trying to explain how Bitcoin works to them is a waste of time. Like, you just need to be able to put something in front of them that they can intuitively use and understand how to use. And importantly, like, hold their hand in that important way to safeguard them from, like, the easy fuck-ups. Like, you know, most people lose coins. They don't get them stolen. They screw something up and lose them.
Nothing like inflation in a developing country to, like, show how those people understand Bitcoin very fast. You know, at least transactionally speaking, they're not saving on it because of volatility, but they do use it so that they can get around their country's issues. You know, and North Americans went to trade. So, like, you're not going to see, like, you know, the kind of adoption that people dream about overnight. It takes time.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and I agree with what you guys are saying. I think, you know, we have a strong marketing department with the governments around the world just kind of doing the work of building the case. That's where I actually tell people to start when they ask me about Bitcoin or they want to learn. And I tell them, well, go learn about the current money system and go read about central banks and how they were started and the Fed. And you got to learn the scam first to understand why Bitcoin and why everyone that starts to learn about it becomes extremely passionate about it. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I think there are some hurdles, like you said, Shinobi, with making things user-friendly. You know, like, I don't know how to use a cold card. I'm not going to lie, MBK. I don't know how to use it. So, like, it's intimidating to try to learn, like, just the different technologies. Or I'm thinking, you know, my parents have Bitcoin, but they wouldn't have been able to get it and secure it and, you know, put it on a hardware wallet on their own. So I do think from that perspective, we have some work to do on, you know, making things user-friendly and making them less intimidating, less barriers to entry, I guess.
Yeah, that's why, for example, we created the Tap Signer, right? So that you can have a little bit more of like a simple bank-like experience where you just tap your card to nunchuck and now you have your coins sort of fairly safe. But, you know, like, you're not holding millions of dollars in that phone, right? So it's okay for you to, like, sort of be like, oh, I don't want to learn how exactly everything works yet. But I think, you know, it's important that if people want to have all their savings on something, they really understand it. Otherwise, they're going to get a DM saying, hey, are you a Ledger user? Please send me your seed so I can help you. You know, and then people do send the seed because they don't understand it, right? I think it's important that we don't dumb things down too much. We just have to have like a step ladder kind of solution where the tools themselves encourage people to keep less as they have more trade-offs, right? So, you know, first, you know, take $20 of Bitcoin out of Coinbase into a phone wallet that you control the seed, right? And then try playing with that. And then that sort of like makes you understand, oh, Bitcoin, I can send. Oh, there is the seed thing. You know, and then you move it maybe to like either a multi-sig tap signer on Nunchuck, which takes like 2 minutes to set up. Or you go sort of read some more and then you get to your cold card, right? But like, I don't think anybody who has like $100 worth of Bitcoin on a phone wallet should immediately move to a cold card. I think that's silly.
Yeah, baby steps. I agree with you there. I have kind of an interesting question just about, you know, KYC, which is know your customer for anybody who's listening who doesn't know that. You know, Shinobi, I know you're very big on privacy, and I've actually even heard maybe a rumor that you won't go to Vegas because of the surveillance. So my question is, with KYC becoming, you know, pretty much the standard to purchase Bitcoin on major exchanges, how do you guys see that playing a role in, you know, Bitcoin as it moves forward? Like, do you see non-KYC as very important? Do you see KYC as something you just can't get around? I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I mean, it's a really tough question. Like, especially like it comes down to like how much Bitcoin are you trying to get your hands on? Like these days you have things like Bisc, like I forget the name of it, that Sats thing on Telegram, HODL.
RoboSats?
Yeah, RoboSats. But like, you know, you can, it's not that hard. Well, Beauty On would be tearing my head off if he was here as Taco. Like, it's not that hard these days to get your hands on small amounts of Bitcoin without KYC. But when you try to actually scale that up to more significant sums, like that starts becoming a much bigger problem. And it's really a fucking joke at the end of the day. You live in a world where you actually have major multi-billion dollar banks like HSBC specifically designing security windows so the cartel can slide the briefcase full of cash under the window and it actually fits. To be shrieking about how necessary KYC is to stop all the bad things, it never fucking does. But it's also just the reality that you can't start a business without finding like niches like as Teco or like small volume things that kind of bypass the requirement to follow those regulations. But once you start trying to get into higher volume businesses or higher volume ways to trade or buy or sell Bitcoin, like it pretty much becomes inescapable. And that is a huge issue when it comes to privacy. Because, you know, if you go buy $50 like with a voucher on Azteco, as long as you're not going around like telling everybody you send Bitcoin to, like what your name is and what your address is, like there's a lot more room to kind of make mistakes there. There's a lot more room to screw up in little ways. And the information that leaks isn't as damaging as if you got some coins on Coinbase and made those same mistakes. And it's just a really shitty dynamic in those terms, especially if you're talking anybody who wants or needs to put a sizable amount of their wealth in there. Because it's like, I can go buy, if I have an Azteco, you know, vendor anywhere near me, $100 voucher, and just, I'm done. But if I want to put $5,000 into Bitcoin, $10,000, like, that's not that simple. Like for an average person new to this space who doesn't really know anybody, like where are you going to find some reliable, trustworthy way to get those sums of money, you know, without KYC? Like that's not easy to do. So that's a huge barrier, not necessarily in terms of Bitcoin adoption, but in order to really get people into a good place when it comes to privacy, because you're already starting off at a huge disadvantage the instant you touch a platform that uses KYC.
Yes. And I just to, as a follow-up to that, for maybe people who are listening who don't understand, well, why is privacy important and why is, you know, non-KYC Bitcoin important? And, you know, I'd love for you to just sort of expand on that. And I'm also curious to know, were you always very privacy focused, or was that sort of a function of Bitcoin and forward thinking with things?
I was always kind of paranoid about UTXO management and not mingling coins together without really thinking through what I was doing. But that's because I bought my first coins, I threw it on a wallet, and then I spent the next 6 months going, okay, like what are the ins and outs of how this actually works? But, you know, Bitcoin can be really dangerous in certain circumstances if you just use it naively without considering privacy. Like, it's a little better these days in terms of basics of software design. But, you know, back in the day, if you just bought some Bitcoin and started spending it, like every transaction you make is just a giant chain peeling off what you're spending and pointing backwards to those coins you bought. Like you can wind up laying out your entire financial history for anybody you give money to just follow there on the blockchain. And that can be really dangerous. Like you pay the wrong person naively for a cup of coffee and they see, oh, this guy has $1 million in Bitcoin. You might wind up in the back of a van the next week. Like, it really is, without taking the extra steps to preserve your privacy, just putting your entire financial history out there for anyone in the world you've interacted with to just see the whole thing. And that can be very dangerous.
So, question.
Hey, guys, sorry. I got to step out just because I got a call. Hey, bring V, Seared Salmon, up. He's good to take my place here.
Yeah, for sure. Request that, V. We'll be happy to have you. Shinobi, follow-up question for kind of what you're talking about. What do you think of when we kind of get to the scenario eventually, I hope, where kind of there's more demand for, I see, free Bitcoin than there is supply, especially when corners kind of feel more urgent about accumulating KYC free Bitcoin? What do you think is kind of the fallout of a scenario like that? Are these sacks actually going to be traded at a premium? What are we just going to find a way to increase the way that we are able to accumulate these as supply? What is kind of your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, we're already in that world. Like, anything KYC free at this point does carry a premium versus what you can get on Coinbase or Cash App or whatever. And that's pretty much always been the case. But the problem is, like, how do you scale that? Like, decentralized exchanges, decentralized order books as a general thing, those all have massive scaling problems, security problems, civil attack problems. Like, in a decentralized marketplace, when you're trying to figure out, like, fair price or look at the history of things, how do you know that all these trades you're looking at actually happened and weren't just somebody going back and forth making fake trades with themselves to manipulate the price? And like, the way that works right now is all those coins are just coming from KYC marketplaces, and somebody is getting them and then selling them on these KYC free places at a premium to make money on the spread there. And that kind of keeps things in check, where for the most part, the price is actually just set by those KYC platforms. And you just add the premium that people doing that trade want to add on top for KYC free. And I think if we ever get to a place where most of the volume is happening on those KYC free platforms or decentralized platforms without just kind of sucking liquidity off of centralized ones like Coinbase, like, that is where we want to get. That's where I want to get. But that, you know, begs a lot of questions about the security and the dynamic of those platforms. Like, are we looking at accurate price history? Like, how much of this history is real trades versus just manipulation? Like, there's a lot of issues I see there in terms of making that really sustainable and workable long term.
What are the, I guess, one or two issues and kind of huge red flags of these decentralized marketplaces that we've seen in the past that we are just going to have to fix in order to kind of move forward and scale this at size?
Well, I mean, the simplest one, like something like a cash market, like local Bitcoins, you used to just be able to open the website, find some user's profile, and just call someone on the phone and go meet up somewhere and give them cash and get Bitcoin. Like, how do you make that secure? I mean, like, you need some degree of street smarts and common sense to really do that safely. And I know people who have both of those things in abundance who've been robbed, like trying to buy or sell Bitcoin and cash like that.
Gotcha. No, that totally makes sense. I think it's kind of a problem that neither of us can just sit up here and have the answer for. But like all things that I've seen in the Bitcoin space, if there is demand for it and there's a problem, eventually someone will come up with a pretty good solution. So bullish on the future, but yeah, we still have a lot left to go. Are we going to bring up V or anyone else? Do we know?
I sent him an invite, but I'm not seeing him accept it yet.
Shinobi, I have a follow-up question for anybody who's listening who is hearing what you're saying and is realizing, wow, okay, I think I need to level up on my privacy. What sort of tips do you have for people who maybe want to either live a little more of an anonymous lifestyle and or just interact with their Bitcoin in a more privacy-focused way? What tips do you have for people?
Well, I mean, first off, start by getting some coins that aren't KYC'd. And rule one of that is under no circumstances ever put those in the same wallet as KYC coins. Like if you have KYC coins now and you want to start buying KYC free coins, keep them completely separate in completely isolated wallets and don't go doing stupid things like paying for something with that and then putting your name and shipping address on it. Second, look at things like Samurai, Wasabi, Join Market in terms of actually maintaining the privacy of your coins, or if you have KYC coins you want to make private. Like all three of those projects, despite all of the bitching and moaning and whining on Twitter, work if you use them properly. Just whatever tool you're going to use, look at the best advice, the best practices for using that, and follow them when you use it. And, you know, last, you know, Lightning for small purchases, it's not a perfect privacy solution, especially if you're receiving money. But for sending money, it actually has pretty good privacy in terms of whoever you're sending that money to. They don't know where it came from. They don't learn anything about how much money you have. They just see the payment arrive and know that it's completed. But, you know, just start with basic things like that and just keep learning. Like using something like Bitcoin privately, it's not something you're just going to magically get airtight overnight. You're not going to understand everything overnight. Like that's something you actually have to put effort into understanding and maintaining.
Really great tips. V, welcome up to the stage. We're talking about KYC and what it means and why it can be dangerous and how to operate outside of KYC. I don't know if there's anything you want to add into that piece of the conversation, but welcome up.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think Shinobi summed it up well. The first thing you should learn is what a UTXO is versus an account, and then how that, you know, technical decision differs among blockchains, and how then you should do something called coin control to segregate your UTXOs, which are essentially pieces of Bitcoin in various denominations, almost like a $5 bill or a $1 bill, and then not mix them all together in one wallet, you know, further leaking your privacy. And then just doing that will probably get you 50% of the way there. The other aspects are, you know, running your own full node and making sure your wallet talks to your full node, because every wallet does need to communicate with the full node. So if it's not using yours, it's reaching out to the network and using someone else's. And there's malicious parties that want to intercept this and act as intermediaries so they could aggregate this information and then sell it to the government. So yeah, just doing those. And then, you know, no one's perfect. I've used KYC services. Idea is to limit how many places you're going around and, you know, doxing yourself with your face and the ID and your social security and all that information. Because the more you KYC yourself at multiple places, you're increasing the odds that these sensitive PII details will then be exposed in a data breach. Odds are, you know, all of this is leaked on the dark net already. If you look hard enough, you can find majority of this because of Equifax and all sorts of leaks. But the strategy that they use is they're combining like these password lists that have leaked, whether they were storing the passwords in clear text versus hashing them, or whether they were using old hash algorithms that aren't necessarily useful any longer for protection. and then combining them with other leaks that just happen on a daily basis. They're kind of stitching this together. You know, you can go to this website called haveibeenpwned.com, and it shows you where your email has been exposed in a data breach. And that's why it's also important to have a unique password and a very strong password for every site that you create an account at. And then ideally also have dedicated purpose emails and phone numbers. Now, this is way unnecessary for the average person, but I strongly recommend it for people that work in this industry because, you know, it often feels like we do have a target on our back. And the more difficult of a target we are, the attacker gets frustrated. To a state actor, however, if you learn about the OSI model, good luck beating the fiber that they've laid in the ground itself. So that's kind of where I lie along the lines of this whole privacy and KYC type of stuff.
Yeah, it's really fascinating and intricate when you start digging into it. You know, someone who's just buying some Bitcoin because their friend talked about it, maybe don't need to be like as concerned with this. But if you're going all in on Bitcoin and, you know, your life savings are in it and or, you know, you have a lot of money that you're putting into it, these layers of privacy are going to become more and more important. And it's interesting because it seems like, at least in my mind, there's a few reasons why you want to be very careful with, you know, how your privacy is set up. One, it's, you know, you don't want to become a target for a bad actor. But two, in my mind, just with what we're seeing in the world today and like the layers and layers of control that continue to roll out, you know, the central bank digital currencies being one of the ways that they're going to try to control people. It's also something you want to protect yourself from as the governments continue to, you know, crack down on their controls, at least in my mind, you know. So it seems like there's multiple layers to why privacy is important. First, you don't want to become a target. Of course, you don't want, you know, where your wallets are and your coins are to be, you know, public knowledge, which they are on the blockchain. But I think even taking it a step further, we have to protect ourselves from, sadly, our own governments, you know? So curious to hear, Shinobi, your thoughts on that piece of this. And, you know, Bitcoin is this decentralized network and it's supposed to be focused on privacy. But if you're out there, you know, KYCing and just spending, you know, and moving your coins around without thinking about it, then essentially, like, is it really decentralized?
Well, yeah, I mean, the network is. It's not going away. It's not going to get shut down. But, you know, if you are on a list, you are on a list. You know, like, for instance, today's tax day. If you've ever, especially someplace like the US or Europe, sold coins on a KYC exchange, I really hope you declared that and paid the taxes, because these days, all of those big exchanges, they proactively report that to tax authorities. Like, this isn't 2013 anymore. You can't just go sell a shit ton of coins on these exchanges and then just not tell your tax authority about it. Like, they're going to find out. They're going to already have that on record by the time it's time for you to file your personal return. So you need to be aware of that. You need to think about that. Like, you can't just hop on Coinbase, do whatever you want, and then expect to fly below the radar. Like, they literally ask you in the US now, have you sold or received any cryptocurrency, any interest in this? Literally anything except just buying it and nothing else, you have to check the yes box. And if you don't and they catch you, that's filing a fraudulent tax return. Like, there are very big consequences that can come of that. And so, you know, that's really an individual's choice to make. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell people break the law, but, you know, whatever decision you make, like, know what's going on and think that through, because consequences are going to happen one way or the other, and you need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, very, very good points. And I mean, they're not going to just let, you know, Bitcoin be widely adopted and compete with the CBDCs. I mean, there's a chance, I think, that, you know, as these central bank digital currencies start rolling out, which they are, it's not a conspiracy theory, it's happening. You know, governments want people to be on that because they want to be able to identify, well, where are people spending their money and how are they spending their money? And they want to look at that data first, but then they're going to start limiting, you know, how and where you can spend your money. And I think this is a huge reason why Bitcoin is so attractive to a lot of people, because it gives them the ability to opt out of that system in a sense. But by opting out of that system, you still need to be careful with your own OPSEC and your own privacy. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how there's, you know, essentially these two, I guess we can call it layered money systems happening in conjunction. Like, we're not quite there yet, but it's starting. So kind of curious to get both V and Shinobi, your take on CBDCs and, you know, the impacts that those are going to have.
Well, I
go
mean,
for Shinobi.
They're a meme. Like, they're a complete meme. I don't, like, when people say CBDC, most people hear that and think here is a blockchain like Bitcoin, you know, managed by private keys in a wallet that manages them like Bitcoin. That's never gonna happen. Like, that's a meme. Like, CBDC, the way I think about that is just a giant meme propaganda campaign to try to convince people that adding a QR code to PayPal or Cash App is some innovative crypto like advancement. And no, it's just a different payment experience for the same centralized systems that we have right now. And that's all that is. They're just trying to take the same payment infrastructure and systems we have now and just make them seem more cash-like, or make them seem more crypto-like, when in reality, you're just adding a new UX wrapper around the same shit and trying to get people excited by that. And that's not to dismiss all the risks and the obvious trends of people pushing for more and more control over how you use your money. Like, that's absolutely happening. It's going to continue to happen. It's going to get way worse. But there is not some fundamental application of new technology underlying that. It's just a slick marketing campaign.
I tend to mostly agree with that. I think they're very real in the sense that cash is trying to be phased out, and cash to me is economic free speech. Like any other government program, however, I do agree with Shinobi that it's going to be completely botched in implementation. It's basically going to be Zelle with better marketing, and maybe they will grow it or implement certain features where there is like some sort of UBI system for people that are suffering during an economic depression, as well as, you know, sort of funds that expire if you don't consume in time, you know, certain features like that, that they would like to have. However, actually getting adoption top down versus bottom up, I don't think it'll play out the way they believe it'll play out. And I think that's why, also along with the IC being listed and whatnot, it's important that we kind of have our own bottom-up barter economies with Bitcoin. It's very important to earn Bitcoin, try to do things for Bitcoin, try to pay people in Bitcoin. I'm not telling you not to HODL, definitely HODL, but it's important that we have these sort of supply chains and logistics set up. And in that sense, I'm very grateful to be living here in Texas, where we have people like KNC Cattle, which, you know, we can buy our beef in Bitcoin. The more we have in options like that, they can't cancel us or cut us out of the system like we fear they've done, you know, previously in other North American places like Canada, that we traditionally only view in places like China with the social credit score, when they can't even travel and things like that. So I think it'll be a cat and mouse game, but it's going to be a laughing... It's going to be a joke for probably half this decade.
Yeah, agree on that, V. Really good points. Something that I have been thinking of, just looking 5-10 years down the road, if we do get to the point where a common CBDC is widely adopted, what are we as Bitcoiners kind of anticipating the challenges being of actually getting someone who has the majority of their money in a CBDC onto Bitcoin? And what is that process going to look like? Because there's not too much friction right now with cash and bank accounts and the current way that exchanges are kind of set up. You can onboard someone into Bitcoin pretty easily and pretty quickly with little to no friction at all. Really, the only friction is kind of education, right? It's not actually the ability to do so. But in a CBDC environment with everything really controlled, I feel like that friction would be a lot more. So I want to kind of open up that conversation if we ever even get there.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be a money launderer to sell Bitcoin for a CBDC essentially at any sizable volume, because all the money you're receiving for Bitcoin, you're going to have some reason, some excuse to justify why that money is flowing to you if they ban using it to buy Bitcoin. And if those excuses don't hold up, snap, your money's frozen. Snap, your money's seized. That kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier about decentralized and KYC free exchanges. Like, that might be workable for small amounts. Like, if you just want to buy a couple hundred bucks of Bitcoin from somebody.
In a CBDC environment with everything really controlled, I feel like that friction would be a lot more. So I want to kind of open up that conversation if we ever even get there.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be a money launderer to sell Bitcoin for a CBDC essentially at any sizable volume, because all the money you're receiving for Bitcoin, you're going to have some reason, some excuse to justify why that money is flowing to you if they ban using it to buy Bitcoin. And if those excuses don't hold up, snap, your money's frozen. Snap, your money's seized. So, like, yeah, that kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier about decentralized and KYC free exchanges. Like, that might be workable for small amounts. Like, if you just want to buy a couple hundred bucks of Bitcoin from somebody, but try purchasing anything sizable with that for the person selling you Bitcoin, that's going to be a huge risk. Because if a flag goes off, that their money gets seized that you just gave them for that, and now they have nothing. You have their Bitcoin and they have no money for it.
Hey, Chris. Also, I just want to add on that. Like, I'd actually counter a little bit that there isn't friction. I mean, I haven't opened an account with an exchange for a while for a lot of the reasons that, you know, V and Shinobi mentioned. Personally, I have no interest in sort of expanding my surface attack vector across multiple exchanges. But the most recent one I did, I mean, I thought it was more invasive than opening a bank account in terms of staying in a room, a well-lit room, taking a picture of my social security card, different angles. So what I would say actually is, when people are trying to orange pill and onboard people, do whatever you want. My personal opinion, don't send them directly to an exchange, because if we're going to speak about, hey, this is, we're removing, you know, the money from the state, and, you know, this is free money, and their first experience is stand in a well-lit room at all these angles and take pictures of their social security card, your driver's license, it really sends a lot of mixed messaging. So, I mean, I would start with something very simple. Just, hey, here's a wallet. This is how this works. So I actually think there's a ton of friction. And it's, I mean, when you talk about the CBDC route, it's only going to get worse. And I think exchanges try to be creative, and I have a lot of empathy for them. I mean, frankly, they're doing what they can do. They're doing what they have to do to operate without breaking the law. And so they try to have some creative solutions, like, all right, we'll lower limits and it requires a little less like KYC. But I mean, it's only going to get worse, right? I mean, I think recently we just saw any transaction you send now, if you earn over $600, requires someone to fill out like a 1099-K. They're always going to figure out a creative way to try to get you back on the radar if you slip off of it. And I just think it's one of the just realities of people are either going to comply or not comply. But as it relates to, you know, getting onboarded to Bitcoin, the KYC exchange process, I think personally is just not a good first place to start.
Yeah, I actually think that because of CBDCs, emerging countries will be the ones that will win in Bitcoin adoption, because ultimately, you know, there's still so many people that don't have bank accounts and smartphones today. So I think as the EU, China, and us start to adopt these CBDCs, and like, I think the other countries will learn from our mistakes. And ultimately, maybe I'm just being super optimistic, but I think there'll be like a massive flip of power, but it'll take a while. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, at least in the US and hopefully most of Europe, I don't think Bitcoin is going away. I don't think it's going to get banned. I just think they're going to smother it with regulation to force it to be treated more and more like an investment and commodity, and just make it incredibly difficult to actually use it as a means of transacting or using it as money. But other than that, I think you're probably right at the end of the day. It's just, I don't think some place like the US is even going to try to ban it outright. They're just going to make it so obnoxious to use in day-to-day commerce that most people are just going to resign themselves to, I buy it, I hope the number goes up, and then I make some profit in the next couple of years. But I mean, if you look at, on one side, countries like El Salvador that are openly embracing it and others following in their footsteps, and then you look at countries like Nigeria where the trust in government is so eroded that people are just blatantly ignoring restrictions and laws banning its use, I think you're spot on pretty much.
So this actually leads me to scrolling through Bitcoin Twitter yesterday, and I saw a bit of an argument between a few people on if it matters if she's adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. Some said yes, some said no. What are kind of the opinions of the crowd on that topic?
I mean, I don't think it matters except for the places where they do. Like, at the end of the day, Bitcoin's still going to be here. It's still going to work. Just, is it going to be easier for people to use it in one country versus another?
Yeah, definitely. D, I feel like you would have some pretty insightful comments on there. Do you have anything to add?
Sorry, did you just ask the implications of legal tender laws?
Implications, yes, but also just the need of actually countries adopting it as legal tender. Is it kind of a wasted time, a wasted vector, a wasted pursuit of Bitcoiners to actually accomplish? Or at the end of the day, is it actually needed for us to take that next step forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm kind of impartial. I mean, there is this sort of awkward moment when you think through it of like, you know, Bitcoin, I think, really is at its best when it's a sort of bottoms up grassroots sort of movement. And so to have a government kind of come in and impose it, which, I mean, frankly, legal tender law is an imposition. It's not what I think is the long term or the broad winning strategy. I mean, countries are free to do what they want to do. And if legal tender laws essentially is a sort of kind of a way to orange pill and just get people like, oh, you know, why Bitcoin? Why, you know, that might be interesting. I mean, it seems like a means to a certain end, right? To orange pilling people, but I don't know. I'm rambling because when I think through it, it doesn't get me that excited to think about we're going to be, you know, spreading adoption of Bitcoin because a bunch of, you know, heads of government are going to say so. That doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. I think this is going to be way more effective as a, you know, bottoms up approach, because think about it. When governments impose things, I mean, people's tendency is to meet it with skepticism, right? And so I think it depends on the context in terms of how it's being rolled out. And I mean, me personally, I think Bitcoin adoption, broader Bitcoin adoption, is because people are going to find a way, you know, they're going to find an actual need for it for them personally, not because, you know, the government's saying that you have to do it.
It just goes to show we're so early like so, so early. And honestly, El Salvador is like way ahead of their time. I honestly think that, you know, it'll most likely Bitcoin will end up being like the world reserve currency, but countries will still, you know, they will want, the governments will want their power. They will have their fiat, CBDCs, whatever, but we'll have the option of Bitcoin when it comes to saving and trading. Internet, like for international trade, I mean.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like just revealing a lot of maybe my political leanings here, but I mean, I feel like the best thing a government can do, is, you know, if they're interested in getting Bitcoin in the hands of their people, is frankly just, you know, educate and kind of get out of the way, I think is the best thing. I think it was just met with skepticism, you know, if authoritarian, you know, if there's an authoritarian push for Bitcoin, I think it's just better. If you want to spread it, I think the best way, you know, don't impose it. You know, explain why it's interesting, you know, and help companies and businesses that, you know, are interested in pursuing it and, you know, allow them to flourish. I think bottoms up is the way to go. I mean, El Salvador is obviously the main use case we have right now, right? And I think everyone's right to get really excited about what's happening in El Salvador. But I mean, there's also a lot of valid, you know, criticisms that I think people should obviously discuss. You know, education still has a long ways to go there. You know, not all merchants are super jazzed if you're down there to actually accept it. So, I mean, Bitcoin, it's early stages. I think this is a first step of a lot of steps to go. But yeah, it's not as simple as flipping a switch and saying, hey, it's legal tender and everyone, you have to accept it. And, you know, we're now a Bitcoin country, right? There's all the sort of painstaking steps that everyone has to take to, you know, spread Bitcoin, you know, in their respective local area.
Yeah, but I mean, it can be a huge first step, though, that's very important. You know, like I was saying, in terms of the West, like the US and Europe, it is the biggest pain in the ass in the world to try to use Bitcoin as money if you are on the radar, if your tax authorities are aware that you're exposed to it. Like, you have to pay capital gains on literally every transaction you make. You have to account for that. You have to track that. Like, even though the law down in El Salvador has not just ushered in instant, like, massive adoption of Bitcoin, it did remove one of the biggest roadblocks, that, like, requirement to comply with nonsense like that. Like, oh, what was the capital gains on all the grocery purchases I made this year? Like, that's a ridiculous impediment to actually using it to transact. And, you know, the law down in El Salvador completely removed that roadblock. There is no capital gains. Like, people do not even have to consider that.
Yep, totally agree. Yeah, that's why I think that the best way is just kind of out of the way. And I think, yeah, the US, it's, we talk about in terms of non-KYC, earning it is probably the easiest way because, you know, you don't need this sort of technical skill sets to use a decentralized exchange or navigate how to use it. The user experience, let's be frank, on BISC, which is a decentralized exchange, is not as pretty and dolled up as Coinbase, which is obviously a monster exchange. So earning it is probably the path of least resistance, but you know, he's dead on. Like in the US, you know, spending your Bitcoin is a major pain in the ass because of, you know, the U.S. tax code doesn't even think of it as money, right? It's commodity. It's like you're handing around a piece of art, which is absolutely idiotic. So that's where I think when I think about governments getting excited about Bitcoin, I think that's great. I would love to see it, though, in the form of sort of like, you know, getting out of the way, right? And when I say get out of the way, it's about, you know, don't tax it with a crazy capital gains tax. Don't make us send a form if you send more than X amount. So I think that's where I get, you know, enthusiastic when I hear that some government in some country is interested in Bitcoin. I guess the context matters. And if that context is them sort of, you know, helping more of a bottoms up grassroots approach, then, you know, Godspeed. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Carly, I don't know if you have any parting questions for the group. I know you've kind of been lurking around over there, so I want to also pass it to you.
Yeah, no, I've been enjoying this conversation because I think there's so many different ways you can go with the conversation about Bitcoin. And I think the legal tender, you know, and adoption with nation states is inevitable, hopefully. But I also know that, you know, CBDCs are also inevitable, and they kind of, in a sense, play against each other. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, I think that it's great for nations to be adopting Bitcoin as a standard like El Salvador, but I agree with D in the sense that it seems to me like the grassroots bottom to top approach is probably going to be, you know, the real way forward with things. But I just think it's so interesting, and there's so many different facets about Bitcoin, and it can seem intimidating to try to learn, you know, all of these different avenues and things that you can talk on about Bitcoin. And I just want to encourage anybody who's listening, who's maybe just a beginner or doesn't really even know what Bitcoin is, that just take baby steps as you're learning. You know, I know that pretty much all of us up here on the panel have been learning and studying and talking about Bitcoin for probably thousands of hours, you know? And so I guess I'll just plug the conference here a little bit, because, you know, we're doing the Bitcoin conference next month in Miami. It'll be May 18th through the 20th. We're going to have tons of different speakers and panels, and we'll be diving into all these kinds of topics and so much more. And so if you're interested in learning about Bitcoin from all of these different angles, I definitely encourage you to get down to the Bitcoin conference in Miami. It's not only a way for you to get educated, but it's also a way for you to meet other Bitcoiners. And I think it's going to become increasingly important to be aligning yourself with people in the Bitcoin space who, you know, you can ally with as things start to progress within the world stage. So I don't really have any other questions, but I just have really enjoyed this conversation. And I think it's very fascinating when you think about all of the different layers involved with Bitcoin and its use cases, its adoption, how we move it forward, all of that stuff. So I really just appreciate the conversation. And Chris, I know you wanted to talk about one of our announcements for the conference.
Yeah, definitely. So yesterday we announced Ridwan Kamil. He is an Indonesian governor. He governs over 50 million people in Indonesia, and he's actually coming to the Bitcoin conference this year to give a keynote talk. I'm not exactly sure who he's going to be sitting down with yet. That would be more of a question for our programming team. I don't think it's announced, but we did announce that he's coming to speak. So I did a little research, of course, on Ridwan, because I personally was not familiar with his work or that he even was a Bitcoiner, but turns out he really is a Bitcoiner. And he actually, surprisingly to me, his background is that he's an architect. He's designed and done architecture for various mosques and other amazing buildings in Indonesia. If you have a chance today, go look up Ridwan and some of his architecture work that he's actually done throughout Indonesia. Some of this stuff is mind-blowing. It really feels as if he's kind of back into the early 1800s, when kind of humanity's mindset and their ability to produce these wonderful buildings was at its peak. And it's not just tall skyscrapers made of glass like it is now, with no kind of artistic or intellectual ability out of it. So I'm really excited about Ridwan actually coming and joining us. Any kind of government figure outside of the United States and outside of Europe that is looking to bring Bitcoin to the region is always extremely exciting. So really looking forward to hear what he has to say. I don't know if anyone has anything to add to that at all, but thought it was really cool that he was an architect and really thought some of his works were top-notch, impressive, things that you really don't see every day when you're strolling the streets of the U.S.
That's so cool. Yeah, I just pulled it up. Wow, some of these are pretty amazing. But yeah, I mean, I think the cool, exciting thing about the announcement of him coming to speak is he wants to bring Bitcoin adoption and mining into Indonesia, which apparently I think there's about at least 50 million people there, which is pretty exciting. I actually haven't been to Indonesia. Have you guys been to Indonesia? I haven't been to Bali yet. It's definitely on my list, but it's quite a journey. Anna, did you go there while you were over in that side of the world this recent trip?
I didn't go this time, but a few years back, we went, Tone Vase organized a financial summit in Bali. So we had a chance to attend, and it's a magical place. Too bad I didn't get to meet Ridwan. He would have been perfect for the financial summit. But yeah, no, it's super exciting. You know, it's amazing to see leaders just, you know, embracing and adopting the idea of sovereignty and sound money. So I absolutely can't wait to see him at the Bitcoin conference. Yeah, counting days, you guys. We're 30 days, just 30 days left. So we'll see everyone in Miami. Super excited. This has been an amazing conversation. Shinobi, thanks so much for coming. DV, you guys are awesome. Always, you know, great to hear what you have to say and how you think. It's just brilliant.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me as well. It was great chatting with y'all.
Yeah, and V, tell MVK that we really enjoyed having him up today, and that I'll see him next time in Nashville. I know you guys have been around a lot.
Yep, 100%. I'll probably be there next month for the Mempool Summit or whatnot, but
yeah, that's going to be awesome, right? I actually had some people that really haven't come to the park since the early days reach out to me, and they'll be joining us next month. So it's a good one. If anyone's around the Nashville area, make sure you come to Bitcoin Park next month. We're doing a Mempool Summit, like he said. I'm sure Wiz will be up at Adam, and he'll be at his best. So super excited about that.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for joining us. Really enjoyed the conversation. Super excited about Miami. 30 days and counting. Guys, we have a ticket increase in price this Friday. So if you've been on the fence and you're not sure if you want to come, now's the time. Get your tickets. Prices are increasing. We would love to see you in Miami May 18th through the 20th. And yeah, thanks again for everyone who joined us today. Super awesome having this conversation. We'll be back again tomorrow with Good Morning Bitcoin. And we really look forward to seeing you guys for the next conversation.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLive to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.
As 2023 begins, the broke issue stares head-on into the looming realities of a broken economy, a more broke central bank, and considers how Bitcoiners can share their knowledge, their projects, and their mentalities to remain strong economic nodes throughout the winter. As a global Bitcoin news medium with a mission to accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization, Bitcoin Magazine is for all Bitcoiners, the curious, convicted, and the maximalists. Inside Bitcoin Magazine, you will find exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, and powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Each issue will be shipped safely in a secure box mailer to protect the integrity of each copy. Print magazines, not money. Buy Bitcoin Magazine.